Welcome to the It's All Happening Women in CPG podcast. I'm your host, Danielle Calabrese, former CPG founder turned executive who finally woke up one day, 16 years into my career, and decided to take back my power and build a community for women in CPG. Tune in as we break down strategies that successful female entrepreneurs are using to build their businesses and talk about what it's like to be a woman in a male-dominated industry. You'll hear stories of the people who make shit happen, overcoming struggles, and celebrating the wins. Whether you're looking for inspiration, industry secrets, or life-changing insights, this is the place. Hi, everyone. Welcome back. My guest today is a woman who I like to call a non-toxic hustler. And I say this because she hustles in all the right ways, not in a toxic way. It didn't dawn on me until after we recorded this episode how I first met her. So I saw her speak on a panel at BevNet. It's a yearly beverage conference. For those of you who've never heard of it before, it's in Santa Monica, and there's lots of industry experts in there speaking. And she was on a panel, and I just loved her vibe and her energy and everything that she was saying. I walked right up to her after she got off the panel stage. I was like, we have to be friends. I wanted to know her. And then I ended up hiring her a couple different times over the years with different brands that I've worked on to run our PR during launch periods. So she is the founder of, honestly, CPG's most beloved PR agency. I'm sure you've heard of them, Krupa Consulting. And Krupa Consulting partners with Better For You brands that evoke purpose and passion, which we get into today in this conversation. She is also the founder of The Good Smart, a Better For You snack shop, sparking snack discoveries both locally and nationwide. She has two locations in New York City. And in today's conversation, we talk about how The Good Smart has actually now become a distributor to on-premise accounts, serving hotels, food service, corporate campuses, all Better For You snacks. Wait till she talks about their client roster. It's really incredible who they're servicing. And she's tapping into this channel that's like notoriously really hard to sell into. So she breaks down why purpose-driven brands are amazing for storytelling. She talks about some low-cost PR solutions for brands that are just starting out and why she thinks community is everything to a brand. And I just love this so much because I couldn't agree with her more on this point. She's just the perfect mix of creative and business and just honestly like a fun, good person. You need to know her. You can find her at krupaconsulting.com or thegoodsmart.com, or you can also go and visit her shops in New York. So without further ado, my conversation with Rachel Krupa. Rachel Krupa, thank you so much for joining me. I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here, and I'm just excited to see you.
You're the best. I love you so much. I feel like I'm trying to remember when we met, but it was a couple years ago, and I just instantly loved you so much and loved your vibe and your energy and just everything you stand for. So I'm so happy to have this conversation today.
I'm very excited just to chat with you, and I'm so proud of everything that you're building. This is incredible. Congrats.
Thank you. It's a journey for sure, but I'm here for it. You know,
you gotta start somewhere, right?
Totally. And it's just like, I get to talk to people like you every day and like help interesting people in the industry and women and cool brands. And, you know, I love it. So let's get into it. So my first question for you, my dear, what are you currently hustling for?
Oh, we're moving offices. So I am hustling, literally hustling boxes back and forth. But I was just talking to one of, you know, my coworkers this today. I'm like, I wish I could have been an interior designer. I feel like I'm really good if I'm tooting my own horn. But it brings me so much joy. I love building things. like having been working with contractors because we have to build like a conference room. But it's like brings me so much joy in the sense of like configuring things and doing wallpaper and doing paint and just seeing a space come together. I love it.
I could so see that for you. Krupa Interiors.
Right. It will be the next chapter.
Yeah. I love it. So, okay. You like, tell us about your background. You have such a unique background and I'm just like, you've got these two really cool projects. I'm sure you have other things that you're working on too, most likely knowing you, but you have these like two really cool projects and you've somehow managed to take your, you know, I feel like your whole ethos and just get them to flow really nicely together. So talk to us about Krupa, talk to us about the GoodSmart, you know, obviously PR was where you started, right? So just give us a little bit about your background.
Yeah. And I think the background, you know, old, if we want to start from the beginning, small town, like grew up in a very small town, population 1200. And I think that is where I just saw and connected with community, because community in a small town is everything. And I think that was one of the things that my parents instilled with me early on, was just like, do what you're passionate about, because if you're passionate about it, it's not like you're working every day. You have to work every day. But yeah, if you love what you do, then you're going to be fulfilled more than just clocking in and out and providing for yourself or providing for a family. And I think that was really what registered in my mind. My dad worked swing shifts growing up. He worked, you know, but made it fun for us. It was like work a double bubble or a triple bubble. And you were like, ooh, are you getting a double bubble today? Which means like overtime for holidays, or working a morning shift and then an afternoon shift the same day on a holiday is like a triple bubble. And so it was more of like making work fun versus making work work. And I think that was something that I always wanted to have fun with work. And that's what started in PR. And it was more from a standpoint of looking at all the different types of PR that I wanted to get into. I tried political and worked in DC, an internship in DC. Worked with Major League Baseball. And then it was like, those are not for me. And it wasn't until I found more the entertainment side, really nightclubs and restaurants, and working with incredible founders, that I felt that, I don't know, that like burn for more inside. And it didn't feel like work, because it was talking to people. It was connecting the dots. It was talking about their passion to others with passion. And so it was seeing the work that we were doing as a PR agency back in the day, and seeing that in headlines, seeing that in newsletters, seeing that on the news, and you saw that translate to business. And that was what really fascinated me in order to continue to do that. And so I've been in PR now, can't believe it's 22 years,
yeah,
20 plus yeah. years. Krupa Consulting in January is celebrating our 15th anniversary. Which is,
does that make you a veteran? Like, I feel like you're a vet at this stage. You're like a vet.
Just makes me old.
Girl. Or you're just really experienced and, you know, at the top of your career.
It is. I think it's, and I think what we've experienced more in the past 15 years is just the increase of technology. And being able to be nimble and being able to flow with the times and being able to stay relevant. PR back in the day when I was starting, I faxed press releases to media desks, literally faxed. And we didn't have cell phones, so we weren't fully connected. You literally stayed in the office until 10 o'clock until you had to get the email from someone in LA. And then it was like the progression of cell phones, Sidekicks, Blackberries, iPhones, and then laptops. And it was that, and like then you're doing, you know, you're DMing, you're following Twitter, you're following Instagram, you have a rise of influencers, you have a little bit more of like decline of earned media, because earned media now is kind of performance PR, and you have to sometimes have the affiliate side of it too. And then you still need the founder story, and broadcast is being paid. So the industry has changed so much in 15 years. And I think that is a testament of seeing so much, but also being able to
Yeah.
Have a flow with it, because yeah. that's what you need in order to continue to do good work for your clients.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So interesting. I love like the journey of the how things used to be versus how they are now. It's like fascinating to me. So talk to me about what you're seeing right now out there in the world that's working. Like, what are the things that brands that you're working with, that brands you're seeing in your field, what is working? I feel like it changes so often, you know, year over year, but mm-hmm. talk to me about that. I'm so curious.
Yeah. I think from, you know, Krupa Consulting perspective, we choose to work with incredible brands that have incredible founders, incredible stories. So it is really much for us, what we find works is, what is that authentic story? Why was this product created? What is the innovation within that product? Why should this product exist versus others? Is this something that has an innovative ingredient? Is it a new method of doing something? Is there AI technology that's involved? Is it, you know, improving someone's health? So what is it that makes a brand different? And I think that's what works. It's being different and creating something that consumers want to consume because they're also learning about it, but it's also filling a void that they need. And I think that's what makes successful PR. We're not salespeople. You have to have a good, you have to have something great to talk about. And that I think is part of a really great campaign too. It's just, again, we're not salespeople. We are storytellers, and we mm-hmm. educate media and consumers about what, in our minds, what we feel should be in the spotlight of that next chapter.
Yeah, that's so true. It's like the real work, like the foundational work, has to come from the brand and the founders and the storytelling. I feel mm-hmm. like so often, so many times, people just want to, you know, apply marketing or press strategies or tactics on top of like a shaky brand or a brand that doesn't have mm-hmm. like a strong foundation and expect success. And that's just not how it works. You know, it really isn't. Like, it's so much about the storytelling and connecting with your people. So
it's
yeah.
that, but I think a good publicist also pulls out a story that, you know, is there. It's right. having that gut check of being like, wait, tell me more on that. Like mm-hmm. how, and it is the ability to find an incredible founder or incredible brand because it's there and you know it's there, but it's helping to pull out a story because I think sometimes, and you know this, brands and founders are in their brain. They yeah. are like, here is the story that it is. Here's mm-hmm. the void in the marketplace that I'm creating it. But you're like, but yeah, you are. But the way that you got there, how you took that path, where did you come from? What is your heritage story about where this came from? That is more interesting than the void in the marketplace.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
so you have to be able to finesse that and not just look at it being like, here's our plan for PR. Go yeah. and execute. That to me is like, what's fun?
Yeah, founders need that support because like, to mm-hmm. your point, oftentimes like people are just heads down creating. And you don't think about like your global impact. Are you dreaming of launching your own CPG brand, but you're just unsure about where to start? I see so many founders waste time and money trying to figure it out alone without a playbook or a clear strategy on how to have a game-changing debut. On February 26th, I'm hosting a free workshop called Launch Smarter, the four phases of building a CPG brand. And in this workshop, we'll detail the four mission-critical phases of building a food and beverage CPG business that will set you up for a head-turning launch. Jam-packed with insider knowledge, easy-to-follow actionables, and strategic planning, this workshop has everything you need to go from concept to shopping cart. Don't waste valuable hours and money making the mistakes everyone makes in the beginning. Save yourself the time and headache with my proven playbook that I've launched hundreds of products with and dozens of brands. Create a food and beverage CPG brand that attracts repeat customers, buyers, and investors, making you a press and brand partnership magnet. No BS, just a clear-cut path to success.
Don't wait, space is limited. There's a link in the show notes to sign up.
So, okay, talk to me about like purpose driven, because you're very like, you're very into purpose driven, and like, we'll get into the good smart and everything, but you know, why do you think it's important to have, to work with purpose driven brands? You know, it's you, I know I've heard you talk about it before and you know, just what is versus, I just talked to so many brands and so many founders, and like, not everybody has a purpose driven brand.
Yeah, I think it is, everyone wants to create something that helps them. You know, I think for us, purpose driven was really of, again, looking at that, you know, history of, we want to use our voice and our skill sets as publicists to do good in the world. And for us, the goodness in the world is being able to amplify brands that we feel are doing it great, whether that is impacting the environment in a positive manner, that is raising awareness about something that we could activate on. It is talking about an innovation in a healthcare product that is going to help people live longer, feel better about themselves. It can be something that is a new candy that has a new ingredient, or something that just makes you feel good too. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
For us, it's more of impact of those that are doing it at the top of their game for a reason more than just to get on shelf to sell. That's
right.
Obviously consumerism, and that's why people are creating products and brands. But like, what is that reason why? Because that is what's going to make us successful as a publicist and a PR agency.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. With that sort of like philosophy, talk to me about the Goods Mart and how the Goods Mart came about, because the Goods Mart came about, like, you know, after your journey in PR, you didn't start out there first. So why did you want to get into the Goods Mart, and how is the Goods Mart different from when you first started to where you are now? Cause I feel like I feel like it's evolved a lot, right?
I mean, it's over 6 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the worst thing. You're like, wow. And I think I, first of all, never wanted to start my own PR agency.
Really?
And I never had this goal of being an entrepreneur. The Krupa Consulting came because it was more of like, what's next? And I needed to have a job to work. And so it was like, I'll consult with clients and see what I can do. Hence Krupa Consulting. Like,
yeah,
the name could have been so much better,
yeah,
but it works now. Do you know what I mean? But it was more of like filling that. And I think that was something with the Goods Mart too, that I'm a believer in, like, if you talk about something, you either got to do it or you can't talk about it anymore. And
yeah,
a lot of friends would come into the PR agency and just shop our office. You know, they're like, ooh, here's brownie brittle. Here is pasta chips. Here's, you know, Smari, here's Matcha Bar. And then friends just kept coming in. They're like, you should have a store. And
yeah,
clients would say, you have such good relationships with a lot of people. You should start your own brand. What would you start? And
right,
so it was a combination of all of that, of like, what do I actually love?
Yeah.
And the stories of brands launching, like, to me, it is one of the hardest things. Like, having to work with a co-manufacturer, having to work with like all the other steps,
oh, yeah,
that you have no control over. That to me,
tell me about it.
I'm giving everyone a gold star in the sense of like, that to me is hard work. And so for
yeah,
me, I love helping people. And so I love gas stations. Like, again, going back to the small town that I'm from, like, our gas station was like my favorite place in the entire world. Like, I love getting gas. I would always jump in the car, would go with my parents. Like, I'm like, I'll just go with you. Because, like,
yeah,
who would I run into? What would I see? Like, what is there, you know? And so
yeah,
that was a combination of the Goods Mart. It was more of, how do I continue to help brands? How do I continue to connect with consumers? And it just felt right to do it in a store model. But
yeah,
this was 2017 is when the idea came to be. And 2017 was still this buddingness of better for you snacks. It was
yeah,
the budding of the CPG kind of consumer food product and snack category that we are now in today. It was just starting. And
yeah,
that was the goal, was like, create a convenience store that you shopped your, you didn't have to look at every label. Because when you went into classic convenience stores in 2017, you had a small organic section. you had the natural section. Mm-hmm. And then to me, it was more of, what is everything else? If I'm shopping natural and organic, then everything else isn't that. And if this area is so small, there is this other side of looking at the PR side and seeing these really cool, better for you brands starting to pop up all over the place. Mm-hmm. But they work in different stores and you were just like, there's not a convenience store that has this. And so that was more of creating the goods of like one store, everything better for you, a small way to connect with community, connect with brands, learn about it, have it highly curated based mm-hmm. on who the founders are, what the products are, what are the ingredients inside, but not make it alienating. It's not a, we don't consider ourselves like a health store. We're a better for you store, better ingredients, better, you know, sustainability practices, just trying to be better.
A place and where people can go and trust that yeah. what is on the shelves is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hence the yeah. goods.
No. Hence the good. So how many stores do you have now? You have two stores, right?
Yeah.
In New York.
Just yeah. in New York. Yeah.
Yeah. And you started off with your store in Silver Lake, which I, of course, remember because it was mm-hmm. right down the street from my house. And I was like a mm-hmm. huge fan when you first launched. But yeah. the Silver Lake store just didn't work out. Talk to us about mm-hmm. what it was like to close that. And like, how was it, you know, why did you decide that it just wasn't working? Because I feel like it's important to talk about things that don't work. I've had many things in my career that have not worked out. And I think as I've gotten older, I've gotten better about talking about those, like, yeah. you know, things that don't work out because it's very common, you know? So like, what was that process like for you?
Yeah, I think that's such a good topic because it takes a while to get over a morning of oh, yeah. closing oh, something. Yeah. Yes. It was a feeling of failure.
Yeah.
Immediately, you know, yeah. The issue I think with Silver Lake, it was I had no business plan when I started the Goods Mart. There was no business plan. There was no financial model. There was nothing except me building what I wanted to build. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of money to build out a great store. 6 months later, I opened up the New York location. Mm-hmm. A lot of people didn't know I had another lease signed. I had a third location that was going into motion. And again, I had no plan. And yeah. I was also running a PR agency with an office in New York and LA.
That's a lot.
And wow. so as one human trying to do all of it, and at that time, I was fearful that my clients at the PR agency would think that I'm not giving them enough time if they knew that I was also working on the store. So there wasn't a transparency amongst like the agency with what I was doing in the store. And I was very, here's my store. Here's my PR agency. I'm just going to do it and not really like ask for help or communicate it from one side to another. And when you're working in a retail concept in a store, any service business, there's always something that's going to go wrong. It's not the sexiest.
Totally.
You're like, my septic is coming up out of, you know, the pipes and there's literally shit coming into the store. Okay, great. I'm in New York and I'm with a client right now. Let
right.
me try and figure this out. Or, hey, we were just robbed in New York. What do you want us to do? Hold on. I'm in the middle of something. Do you know what I mean? And so
yes,
I had to make a decision.
That's very challenging.
I had to make a decision of what it was. And Silver Lake, again, like I didn't do the math of like Silver Lake in 2018 was
yeah.
not the foot traffic that it is today.
No.
It people live there, but they didn't work there. And there
mm-hmm.
wasn't this community of people working from home yet. And
yeah.
that was the biggest thing. It was basically morning rush after parents took their kids to school or they were going to work. It was great. Evenings were great on, you know, Fridays, Thursdays, maybe not every day of the week. Weekends
right.
were wonderful. And
yeah.
so you can't have a business and sustainable business being open from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. where you have that middle area that's not coming in. And
yeah.
so from a financial perspective, you're like, what makes more sense? And so it was a hard decision that I think only in the past 2 years that I ever really wanted to talk about, that it
yeah.
was more of like, we closed it. It just didn't work, but it was hard. And I think that's the biggest thing that I think there's sometimes when people talk about, oh my gosh, they're closing, this business is like shutting down. and like talking about it in the sense of like trying to, I don't know, like break news or something like that. And in this culture and world today, that a founder, that is one of the hardest things a founder ever has to decide.
Oh yeah.
And they need time and they need support. And it's not because of anything that they're doing. I mean, obviously things are not working, so they're closing, but there needs to be compassion and there needs to be a sense of comfort and support for them, because the hardest decision is to close a business. Because when you're closing a business, it's not just closing a business because you're out of money. You're laying off humans. You are letting down your customers. You are letting down others, and you're also a failure. That is like the process of it. So you're mourning all of these things and it's so hard.
Yeah.
But people don't register that. They just are like, oh, you're closing.
I know. And it's like headline news and then it's over the next day. And thank you for sharing that. I just like, I totally agree with you. Like, I think it's so important to talk about because it's so common and there's just this like stigma around it. Like, I don't know, especially because like, you know, Eater will report it. It's like breaking news. You know, I have a friend who just recently, like over in the last couple of months, shut down like a big restaurant that was operating here in LA for almost a decade. And there was some, you know, some really unfortunate like chain of events that happened around the shutdown, like with the employees getting paid, and it turned into this massive like cancel culture situation that he ultimately had zero control over. And he got just completely dragged through the mud, him and his family, over something that was just totally blown out of proportion. And I genuinely felt so disappointed and bummed for him in that experience, because it just totally like undermined the insane thing that they had built over the last decade. And it ended on like such a, like a negative tone, that it's going to take them a long time to recover from, that they're still recovering from, you know?
There's so much that goes on behind the scenes that most people never will know.
Yep.
And there's a lot of things that people want to say, but they don't want to say it because they don't know how to say it, or it's going to come across the wrong way.
Right.
And so therefore, a lot of the times, like when there's unfortunate things happen of not paying employees, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they were also got wrenched with it and trying to figure out other solutions. And that's where it's hard. And that's where I think sometimes it's always hard. It's just hard. That's
totally. So, but now, like, I just love the model you have. Like, before we started recording this, you were giving me the update on what you're doing with the goods. Like, talk to me about what your strategy, you have this incredible strategy right now that I think is so cool and unique. Like, talk to us about what you're doing and how you're blending your retail store. It's so cool.
It's fun, and I don't even know that we're blending it, but I think this is also the iteration of 6 years of Jill trying to figure out how do we merge them together? Do they merge together at all? But the goal always is, you know, what we've always stood for is like, how do we help elevate young emerging brands? And how do we get these brands in the hands of more people? A lot of the time, to me, it was retail stores. There's only so much impact that you can make on from a retail store perspective. And retail stores are lovely and beautiful. You get so much consumer insights, and it's one of my favorite things to do, to work in our stores at any day. But our goal again is to, how do we get these products in the hands of more people? And so we created a hospitality vertical and a curation vertical. So we're curating for different hospitality groups, and we're also acting as their distributor too. And it is amazing because instead of just our stores right now, we have, I think, 60 some accounts that we're shipping to. And that is everything from Alford Coffee, that is Convene in the co-working spaces. It is Hotel Chelsea. It is Hotel Theta in Midtown. We're starting to work with 60 in the Lower East Side, the Manor Hotel, and the Waldorf Astoria. Beverly Hills was our first account. And so we have so many incredible accounts that they're elevating these brands, because again, the goal of these brands that we carry, they're not, they're maybe just getting to Whole Foods, but they don't have that national reach. In order to get people to be your loyal follower, they need to try you. And yes, there's no better place to be in a corporate pantry or in a hotel mini bar, in my mind. Because then you're going to rip that open, you're going to see it, then you're like, oh my gosh, what is this? Take a picture of it. You remember that place from where you tried it, but then you're also going to look for it when you're going shopping or you're going to order it online. And so that is really like the strategy that we're taking now, where the stores are incredible, but the bigger side is more of the curation side.
Oh, I love this so much because like brands always want to tap into hospitality, not always, very oftentimes, right?
Yep.
But getting in as an individual brand, venturing into the hospitality channel is like total right place, right time, right contact. Like it's a total crapshoot. Like it's all about who you know. And then also like, you know, just getting a single product into a mini bar is hard, but I love how you're acting as like a distributor for these brands. So you're saying, sure, yeah, you can shop, just you can bring like one single brand in, but look at all this other cool shit that we have. And like opening up your catalog to venture into hospitality, because it's just notoriously such a hard channel to tackle. So
yeah,
I love it.
And it's, thank you. And a lot of it is also the understanding of both sides.
Yes.
So it's understanding the volume of a hotel. Mm-hmm. What is their cadence of buying? What is their cadence of just like sell through? What is their storage? And then on the flip side, what's a brand, like what is their supply chain look like? Like, can they fulfill this? How quickly can they fulfill this? You know, does it match? Do you have enough product to go for a year?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's been an incredible, beautiful way of Tetris almost.
Yeah.
Like boom, 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 boom. Who wants what? Who can do this?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been fun. And I think that brings so much joy to me. And I think to the team, because it's like, we always say there's like moments of like Christmas Day for like us with our, with like the brands. It's like, there's nothing better to then email a brand and be like, hey, like 60 comps wants to, 60, you know, the 60 hotel wants to bring you in, like, yay. And then the response back is great. It's like also, hey, you're going to be on like Good Day LA or the Today Show.
Like, oh yeah. That's like,
yay.
Yeah,
it's like Christmas moments.
Totally.
And so those are like the good moment. You're just like, everyone's excited. You're that bearer of good news now, not the bearer of bad news. You're like a giver of good news. And that is like the moments that I think that we constantly continue to do this for. Because again, it's like incredible brands, incredible founders, incredible like purpose that they have. Now you're giving them more places to be.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is just like warm fuzzies all around.
So how did you, like, how have you developed these relationships with these hospitality partners to give these people trust that you can act as like, you know, a resource to their item curation?
I think it's just, I think that's where my background is beautifully placed. You know, I think that's where early on in New York, it was a cocktail waitress. You know, and all of those relationships, hospitality at Hudson Hotel back in the day. It's just like everyone great. I think everyone great came from there. There were the peers that we worked with were incredible, and a lot of people are still in hospitality. So then it's like, hey, a lot of people support, know that I had Krupa Consulting, know I opened up the goods. And then the ask is more of like, hey, like, what do you do for your mini bars? You know what I mean? And it's just like a conversation. And being able to show people what you have and like the background of us doing it, the curation, the, you know, it's all the things of building a brand. It's going on TV, talking about the product, curating things based on taste, having people love it because not only is it pretty on the outside, damn tasty on the inside. It's here's the story of the founder. Here's this. How do you become that storyteller that then amplifies their brand too?
Yeah. So that kind of segues into, you know, my next topic that I want to chat with you about, like, how do you guide brands into making the right decisions around partnerships and just like their general approach, you know, how do you help guide to making good decisions? I'm like interested on how you approach that.
I think my approach is maybe different than some, because I love to talk about it out loud, and it's going to get messy, and it's going to get confusing, and it's going to go from one way to the other way, and then swing back one way or the other, you know? So from a partnership, it's more of like, who's our idea? What are the pros of it? What, like, are we going to get press from it? Are we going to get marketing from it? Are we going to get new followers? Are we just going to look at this as like amplifying trade? Is this for consumers? Like, what are the wins that we're going to get from this? If you were to look at it from someone who was talking the other day, a client was talking about a 12-point system. So are you going to get one point that is like, we did it, we got a social post out of it. We did it, we got more consumers. We did it, we got press. We did it, we got new accounts. We did it, we got X, Y, and Z. So if you look at a point system, how many points are you going to get from that partnership? Yeah. And then get nothing, then you have a social post. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
But some people are. If you're looking at something, a larger brand with your smaller brand, the social post might be great. It's not the 12 points, but that one point is better than 0 points. Yeah. And so I think it's being able to have a very clear conversation with like the team or the founder to be like, hey, here's where we're at. Is this good for you? Not knowing if it's going to be successful or not. We obviously have our points and our thoughts within that, but like, where are we at?
Right, right. Totally. So, okay. Now what about brands that are just getting going? Like, you work with brands, like you're working with a brand that is a mutual client and she's just getting going. Like, but you also are working with like way more established brands. So you really have like, you know, you've seen all sorts of budgets and all sorts of like stages of growth. So, you know, to the listeners and like to the people who are just starting out, like what are some low cost, high impact things that a brand can, you know, actions that a brand can take when it comes to press, media, partnerships, et cetera. Like if you were to do this on your own with just like a super limited budget, knowing what you know, how would you approach your launch budget as it relates to press and media?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I do every day with the goods. No. Yeah, exactly. True. It's so true. I think it is, again, I'm a big believer in media is different because from a standpoint of like, it's relationship based. It's like who you're friends with from like a media perspective, but from a founder, I would say a founder, like if you slip into people's DMs that are writers that you admire and you like send a note, you might get a response. You might not, but you probably will, at least for people to try if you have something fascinating and interesting. Again, that takes time. So on your list of a founder list to do, like a lot of people want to kind of take social sometimes or like do DM and like community engagement because it's your baby and you don't want to give that up. I still respond to most of this stuff on Instagram because like I love it. Yeah, but that's like, it fuels you because you also want that consumer insights.
Yeah,
but I think it is like, this is the connection. It's feedback. It's like either a way of growth. Cause I never think like if you get negative news or bad news, it's ever bad. It's like a growth period. You're like, great. I learned from that. I can change. But I think it's like community building is everything. What can you do? That is again, a low cost. It's like, how do you connect with a local fitness studio? How do you connect with a local business? How do you do shared newsletters? If you have newsletters, like shared social posts, like giveaways, it's a lot of it is like hustle when you have, you know, limited budgets. It's hustle. It's 100% hustle. And it is 100% relationships. It's putting feet to pavements. I believe in FaceTime with people. I think that you get more done when someone knows who you are. They know the energy that you're exuding versus like a phone call. Good place to start. But once you have that energetic like relationship, it helps you so much more in life. Then I think it is looking at why not? Again, like reach out to someone, like send an email, introduce yourself. You don't know what to say, you know, ChatGPT can help you.
Yeah.
but at the same time, like send that. If they don't respond, they're not going to respond if you don't send it. But what if they do respond to your note? Then that is like opening up the gates. It's maybe not going to be now, but it might be later on. And so I think there's a lot of grassroots marketing and hustle that brands should be doing, sometimes more than PR immediately, because I also think that going hyper local, especially if you're talking about a food brand, it's so important, because like you should just infiltrate your local market before you think about going national. And I think that's like the biggest thing that a lot of brands do wrong right now. It's just like, if you're in your town, if you're in your town, if no one knows you, why are you going to another town?
Yeah. Makes no sense. Totally. No sense. It's narrow and deep strategy. I talk about this all the time. I'm obsessed with it. To me, it's like the best way to go. And it applies to your distribution, but it also applies to a lot of your marketing strategy as well. When you're first getting going, you know, like focus on your own backyard. And that's going to be like the lowest cost with the highest impact. So what you're talking about specifically, Rachel, is product seeding, as it relates to influential people and just like cold outreach to anybody who you think could have an impact on your brand, essentially, and getting them to try the product.
Yes, but not even just like through relationships. Like say in New York, the biggest thing that I've always like tell people is just like go stand outside the subways on a busy day, have a bag, give your product out. Have a little note cards taped to it.
Oh, I love that.
You're seeding. Do you know what I mean? Like they tell you to move, you move. But you're hitting that person. We do that sometimes from like the store, because like we're next to, in Soho more particularly, it's like we're next to the Spring Street, you know, Spring and Lafayette. Yeah, that's a major traffic area. So you're like, hey, here, it's like three blocks from the store. Here's this product. Here's this. Drive traffic. Come for a free cup of coffee. Like you're connecting with the person, they see who you are, they're trying it, and it costs you 2 hours of your time plus product. Exactly. But then you also have product to give for donation and seeding anyways. So yes, it's relationships from like influencers and tastemakers, but like you also want like the real people that are then going to talk about it. Because if you impact, say, 50 people on that, say 20 people fall in love with it. 20 people are going to say, hey, I tried this. They're going to probably tell another friend. They're going to say, hey, I got this really great snack off the subway. It was this thing. Then that person might be influenced by that person. And so there's a snowball effect that happens by, I think a lot of people sometimes think too big and they're not thinking what's in front of you. Yeah. What can you do to make a difference now with zero, you know what I mean? $0 if it's just you.
Yeah, exactly.
Print things off a printer. Put it out on like a flyer. Do you know what it, there's like so many things that you can do that I think people are like, what's the difference? Grassroots. It's like the way to go. People love that.
Yeah. Grassroots field marketing. Oftentimes I think brands skip over this because of exactly what you just said. They're thinking too high level. I think you have to like start where you're at, right? Like if you have no distribution, you're just launching, like work with what you got, which generally speaking is right in front of you at the beginning, you know?
But you know what that happens with the customer journey though? Customers are like, oh my gosh, I was like one of the first to try this product. They were handing it out at the subway. Like I spoke with the founder, or I spoke with like their, like your internal team. Do you know what I mean? Where it's like not having like a whole like get up and like I'm wearing my branded stuff so that you don't look like a field marketer, you know? But it's going in there. Half the time, like when we do grassroots marketing for the store in the area, which I would recommend for brands to do, is just like I go in and I say, hey, here's some snacks. Here's a free coffee card. I own the store next door. Like, I would love for you to come in. Or, hey, we're doing this barbecue. Will you come in? They're pretty much going to come in because I went in and I gave that time. And that time to me is so much more valuable sometimes than an hour phone call. That I will take that hour, get my steps in, I will do all these other things. But I'm also fueled because I'm talking to people. Mm-hmm. And then that makes me want to do this more, because that feedback that you're getting, that like people are excited. And I think that's also a good point, that if you're ever feeling down and out about your brand, or you're just like, oh my gosh, I've had my last wits. Like everything seems like it's not flowing in the way that I want it to. go hit the field, go talk to people, go to those places that you know you're going to be welcomed and invited, because then that's going to be your fuel to do more.
Yeah, I know. And I think like what you're talking about is human connection. Like human connection is like, that's, you know, it goes so far beyond any ad or any, it can go so far beyond any ad or, you know, like influencer marketing strategy or like paid media campaign, whatever. Like people at the end of the day will never not want human connection. It's just true. I interviewed a girlfriend of mine who is an investor in CPG and restaurants. Mm-hmm. And she's obsessed with both, because like for her, CPG is all about timing and restaurants are all about that human connection, and merging the two, people will never not want human connection, regardless of what anyone wants to talk about like, you know, virtual meetings and virtual work and COVID and this, that. And don't get me wrong, I love virtual meetings and virtual work, but there is nothing that I crave more than human connection and connecting with people on like a deeper level. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. Like with grassroots, how can you get the highest impact with the lowest budget? Talk to people, give your product out, like get out of your comfort zone, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that strategy.
And I agree. And that's like sometimes more where one introduction could make a big change within your business versus spending X amount of dollars in digital spends. You know what I mean? So it's like allocate your time. Yeah. I don't have time to do this and meet this person.
Totally. Yeah. So last thing I kind of want to touch on before we like wrap it up here in a second, but like, what do you look at when a brand comes to you and says, I want to be on the shelf at the Goods, what's your checklist? Like, what's your like yeses and nos?
Yeah. Looking at obviously packaging, just of like, what is it more of like, what category does it go in? Sweet, savory, gummies, chocolate, blah, blah, blah. Then, I mean, we rip it open and taste it.
Yeah.
Then that is our favorite thing. It's just like, oh my gosh, this is so good. Because like for us, it's like packaging is going to change. Like if you have a good product, package can change. Harder to reformulate. And on the other side, it is just like looking at the founder. What is the story behind it? And then it goes into price point. For us, it's more of perceived value. Like I get, would I pay X amount for this? Big thing or small thing. Because then that also knows like the type of like cadence and what's a sales velocity that would happen. Because for us, it's more of like, or being honest, being like, great, we'll put it on our shelves at that price, but we know it's going to be too high for our customer.
Yeah.
And we're going to give it a try for 30 days. And after that, like, we'll keep you posted, but like, this is where you need to go. Like, here is where we feel your sweet spot is. And so that's what we look at. For us, taste is everything.
Yeah.
And then obviously packaging, but like because our stores are so tiny, our team members can talk about something that tastes great that may not have the best packaging, because our customers come in and say, what's your favorite thing? What should I try? Knowing that we get new things in all the time. And then our person is that person that's like, no, you have to try that. I know you like gummies, or I know you like spicy. This is, go for that now.
Yeah. I know. It's so true. Taste is king. It's everything, right? It's like the first, like the number one. You have to nail that, or you're just dead in the water. Like it's the main thing.
Yeah. And how disappointing is it when you actually spend money on something that's like, say, $6 for something that's like a bar or chocolate chip cookie. You know what I mean? You get that in New York these days.
Yeah.
But you open it and you want it to be the best thing you've ever had. And you're like,
I know, it's such a disappointment.
It's just disappointment because the packaging looks beautiful and it should be this, but it's not, that you're like, no.
Yeah. I know. Focus on your formulations, brands out there. Thank you so much, Rachel. I have a final question for you. So if you could give your younger, just starting out self advice, what would you give her?
Oh,
what would you tell her?
I would say have patience. Mm-hmm. Don't compare yourself to others because you don't know what's happening behind doors of other people. What is on the outside is completely different than what's on the inside. And be patient with like what you're doing because it should come around if you have your North Star there.
I love that. So mm-hmm. true. Thank you for all your wisdom on PR and retail and distribution and positioning. I loved our conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Yes. If you liked what you heard, it would mean so much if you follow and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. For tips and advice on your food and beverage CPG brand, you can find us on Instagram at It's All Happening Co. or visit our website at itsallhappeningagency.co to be the first to hear about workshops, courses, and in-person events and freebies. Until next week.